welcome to another episode of We the People Radio. My name is Aaron Ryan.
And my name is Bill Cundiff. And our sponsor this hour is Pape Machinery, our local John Deere ag and turf dealer. They're located up at 3119 Twinview Boulevard in Shasta Lake, and they can take care of all your John Deere products and also do repairs on everything else. Just go up and give them a call, and you can call them at 226-9226. Or did I give the address? 3119 Twinview Boulevard. Yeah, I did. And, it's all coming back to me now. Or you can catch them on the web at papemachinery.com.
Nice job, Bill.
Yeah, well, I wasn't really prepared.
Nobody was prepared. Didn't have our headphones on. The chaos. It's no good without chaos, though. So let's see. We are grateful for our other sponsors. We have lots of individual people who help us out on a regular basis, and most of them just go to wethepeopleradio.us. They hit the sponsor tab and jump in. So we appreciate that. If you have a business and you'd like to sponsor, we don't actually have to say your name if you don't want to be connected to us. But just a little heads up, if you own a dope store, we don't actually want your money. So thanks, no.
Yeah, thanks.
We realize it's a legal business because that's the big excuse these days. But it's a legal business. Oh, okay. Yeah, still say no. That'll be our second hour. We'll be dealing with that. Do we have him? I can't even see you. The glare on the window is so bad. I'm like, Liam's just a...
What's up?
He's just a flash with some cars in the background. I wondered if we had our guest on the horn.
Not yet. No, I'm still getting everything set up, so give me a couple more seconds.
Okay.
Sorry.
Yep, if you would... Uh-oh. Well, somebody's calling me, so it's probably him. Wrong phone. There we go. Different guy. We'll mute our phone. See, it's like that today. So, everybody at home, look at what you're missing. You could see this chaos in real time, but it's probably more fun to see it in your mind. It's kind of like the old-time radio shows where they made sounds in the background. we're old. We're still doing it like that. How sad. So, let's see. We're talking about Pope Francis and Putin's war against Ukraine, which ought to be interesting because we have Francis Rooney on with us today. And we used to interview him in the olden days when he was the ambassador to, or just recently, the ambassador to the Holy See, basically ambassador to the Vatican. And then he ran for Congress. So his bio reads, he is an American politician and diplomat who was the U.S. representative for Florida's 19th congressional district from 2017 to 2021. He was a Republican and served as United States ambassador to the Holy See under George W. Bush from 2005 to 2008. And he has a book out. We chatted about that last time. We've got that interview posted for you if you would like to go hear it. It's called The Global Vatican. He provides an unprecedented look inside the Catholic Church, its role in world politics and diplomacy, and the extraordinary relationship between the U.S. and the Holy See. So it's he has kind of a unique perspective from all these different vantage points. And that made a funny sound. We're all good? Okay. We'll just go with the funny sound then. So, Francis Rooney, are you with us?
Thank you for having me on.
Do we call you former Congressman Ambassador Francis Rooney, or how? I'm not really sure who you are now.
You know, Congressman is such a pejorative term. Stay with Ambassador.
Stick with Ambassador. Ambassadors are still cool.
well,
wait, say that one more time. You're far away from your sound.
Oh.
There we go. Sounds of a struggle. We're all having sounds of a struggle today. It's no good without the struggle. So yeah, Ambassador's still cool. Congressman is has mixed messages.
Well, you know, there's all kinds of people in Congress. There's some really great ones and some ones that aren't so great. There's some people that are willing to compromise their integrity quicker than others. There's just all kinds of people.
Yeah.
You know how that is.
Yeah. We should just stop calling it Congress and call it takes all kinds. My mom used to tell me about that. So, how was your time there? We haven't spoken to you since you moved into the 435, the team of 435.
Well, you know, I ran to try to get the money to fund the Everglades restoration projects, which were approved in 2000, but the Congress had never appropriated any money for it. And I thought, well, maybe since I've been involved, my wife and I have been involved with candidates, that we might be able to do better. And we did. We actually ended up getting $2.2 billion to fund all the important projects that needed to be funded to save the Everglades, to stop moving polluted water into the Gulf.
Well, that's a good idea. And that was, how'd that work out?
Well, that was water that was running off all the farmland, wasn't it? So I recall.
Yeah. Yeah. The sugar industry in South Florida is kind of like the Standard Oil of there. You know, it's kind of like those books written about oppressive companies. Well, that's what they are. They have huge political influence. They gave the president of the Florida Senate $800,000, and so they've been very difficult to deal with. And so I come in there, and I don't really care about their money. I didn't use any of their money. I didn't take any of their money. And I could deal with the Democrats and the Republican leadership and try to get that money done. And Trump understood it because he lives, in Palm Beach. So I said, this affects you. And he got that part.
Good.
Well, that's cool. Did it kind of get fixed, or?
Well, we have the money. They're building the projects now.
Okay.
It's a very complex thing. It involves building these huge pumps and basins where they have to dig out and line them, and where they can hold water and then let it go slowly out into the Everglades, where the grass will actually clean the water. So water can come into the system at 200 parts per billion of phosphorus, and by the time it gets down to the Everglades National Park, it can be as low as 10, which is what the EPA standard is. But the key is to have the architecture to get the water there in the right depth and the right speed. That's where all the big multi-billion dollar projects come in.
Right. And the problem was with the high phosphorus, it was choking everything out. The grass was growing and everything was like in hyperdrive. Is that right?
What phosphorus does, because it's a fertilizer, right? Nitrogen,
right.
Phosphorus. They create a condition of excessive growth of algae and all kinds of bacteria. And, so we had that.
Well, I bet, so was Congress like you, was it as you thought it would be, or was it, was it the proverbial eye-opener?
I didn't really have any idea how it'd be. You know, I ran and won, and so I get there, and so there it was. And that's, a lot of it was, to me, an awful lot of talk and not enough action, having run companies most of my life and things. And, I mean, it even makes diplomacy look fast, and nobody really thinks diplomacy is fast. But compared to Congress, diplomacy is quite effective.
Yeah, you look at some of the terrible bills that go through, and you think, well, it should be painful. Including this last
500 bills a year when I was there, and I think the Senate acted on like 15 of them. So you got to sit back and say, what are you doing?
Yeah, right.
Well, and then the ones that do pass, it seems like it takes forever for anything to really start taking shape and getting done, and in a lot of cases the money they never do spend the money. Look at the COVID relief thing. They didn't spend a lot of that money, and now they're sending it somewhere else.
It's kind of funny though. Even the state couldn't figure that out. They didn't spend a whole lot of it either. So,
well, like in the case of the Everglades, they pass this nice law, everybody goes home and says we're going to save the Everglades in 2000. And they didn't ever appropriate any money. Nothing happened until I got there, and we got the $2 billion to build out these three or four major projects.
Wow.
Yeah, it's pretty sad. That just nothing really gets done.
Yeah, it's kind of like the term limit deal. Like 50 bills supporting term limits. So every congressman and senator can say, I'm for term limits. But every one of them requires a constitutional amendment, which isn't going to happen. So they're just going something they can go home to their people and talk about.
Yeah, well.
Now, I introduced a bill when I was there that said, okay, we don't need a constitutional amendment. We'll just cut off your salary after 12 years. And that was treated quite hostile by the leadership of the House and Senate. Yeah.
Well, I guess if we really want to get serious, though, we have to include a provision for the bureaucrats, because limiting the people that we get to elect basically just cuts the legs out from underneath the voter and does nothing to change. I don't know, out here in the West, it's not the elected people we have to fight as much. It's the bureaucracy that is our hardcore enemy.
Yeah, and it stays. As people come and go, that bureaucracy stays there.
California's
continues.
A great example of the backlash of term limits. You know, our representatives just keep changing seats, and the bureaucrats grind on.
Yeah, but if the elected officials had backbone and would stop them, they couldn't do that stuff.
Kind of. Just takes a long time. I mean, they're in a different branch of government. Just takes a very long time to...
It also takes someone that's willing to stand up and say something clear and concise and take a position.
Yeah.
They don't like to do.
And going to have more... What do we have, 7 Republicans in California in the... Senate.
Oh, yeah, they're knocking it down.
Yeah, they could say all they want, and they're getting nowhere. Meanwhile, the Air Resources Board and the... Well, like here, we have massive cartel dope grows, and they're polluting the universe. I'm sure they'll pollute your food, too, because it's getting into the water table, and it's into everything, the chemicals and all of that, and yet the water board is busy worrying about farmers.
Yeah. Evil farmers.
In Florida, it's the same way. The ag department is the farmer lobby.
Oh, they help the farmers there?
Totally. They're all about the farmers.
Oh, they screw our farmers. No, they screw our farmers and cut off their water and don't allow them to do anything. No, the farmers are the target here. They don't get any special provision here.
How about that nice new thing that Newsom's come up with, that hotels have to tell the local government how many vacant rooms they have by like 2 o'clock in the afternoon, and they fill them with homeless people.
Yeah, I think government used to, or the local government used to be on his team, but I have a feeling they're going to get some religion here pretty quick.
Yeah, once you put a homeless guy in like the Four Seasons San Francisco or something, that's going to be game, set, match.
Yeah. Can you imagine?
I mean, you have the room to clean up, and plus you have the paying guests having to deal with that inside the 4-star hotel they're staying at. It's a terrible idea.
Just
I want to figure out how they pick which of the homeless guys gets to go to the Beverly Hills Hotel.
He's the guy who can actually pay attention long enough to get there. I'm guessing they pick 5 guys, and the one who could figure out how to get there gets to get in.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, they're jumping in front of the traffic here, and I'm sure they're doing that there, too. They're just out of their minds. So, I don't know, but we're looking at the bureaucracy. All the water policy here in the state is focused on ag and personal use and municipalities. No thought to more storage. We're worried about fish too. Big worry about fish. But the cartels are growing thousands and thousands, tens of thousands, millions of plants with carbofuron and, you know, pick your poison, literally.
And water they're stealing from.
By the 55-gallon drum. Yeah, well, yeah, and stealing water by the hundreds of gallons, by millions of gallons. And, the water board, they can't. They actually said the 10 million gallons of water that this one lady proved that they took in this one area that is under drought restriction, and all the agriculture and the regular users have curtailments on their usage. She proved they took 10 million gallons of water. The water board guy actually said out loud it was an inconsequential amount.
Hmm.
That's how worried they are about it.
Yeah.
They don't live here. So
California's pretty strange out there from what we read here in Florida.
Yeah, it's bad, but it's coming. It's coming to everywhere. I mean, they're using private property, and a lot of these states, once they legalize, and they think, oh, it's going to get rid of the black market. Yeah, hot tip. Black market explodes when you do that. So as these states do that, the crush is going to be far, far greater. We better take a really quick break, then come back and talk to you about what we were supposed to talk about.
Okay.
Not that we feel compelled to follow that, but, you know, it would be nice if we didn't just totally lie to our listeners. We should talk about your article. We'll be right back. Our guest is Francis Rooney. He was a member of Congress, just mentioned that slightly, but he was an ambassador. Yay, ambassadors. And we'll be right back. You're listening to We the People, and you can find us at wethepeopleradio.us.
Welcome back, my friends, to the show that never ends. We're so glad you could attend. Come inside, come inside. There behind the glass stands a real blade of grass. Be careful as you pass. Move along, move along. Come inside, the show's about to start. Guaranteed to blow your head apart.
Alrighty, I think we've solved all of our technical problems. It's bad when we all have technical problems on the same day. You know, it's if the engineer has them, that's okay. If we have them, that's okay. But we shouldn't all have them at the same time. Mr. Rooney, you fired this op-ed off to FoxNews.com, but I guess I didn't put a date on here. When did this was like just a couple of weeks ago, right?
A couple weeks ago, yeah.
So you want to launch off into that for those who haven't read it yet?
Sure. I mean, the Holy See has for several hundred years practiced diplomacy, which is rooted in human rights, human dignity, transparency of governments, and the ability to use their unique platform with no property and no hegemony to have a powerful voice in the world. And now this Pope comes along and buys into the argument that we antagonize Putin by expanding NATO and therefore are culpable in what Putin's doing. And I don't buy it. I think it's ridiculous.
No, I agree with you.
I think there's a lot of stuff he's doing that's ridiculous, but yeah, this one, absolutely.
Yeah, he's done a lot of strange things. But, you know, NATO was established to nurture Western democracies and protect them. And now we have new Western democracies, and I think they deserve protection, too.
Yeah. I mean,
certainly Poland and the Baltics and Hungary and Romania and Slovakia and the Czech Republic and, you know, Croatia and all that.
What do you think his, I don't know, I guess it's always his vantage point, because his vantage point comes from a place that is very, very socialist. So that's part of a problem. That's part of the problem. But also, what's he trying to do? Like, what's his motivation there?
Well, I think there's some threads in him that, you know, run through a lot of Latin American populist clerics. You know, this fear and hostility towards the United States. The suspicion and fear of developed countries versus less developed countries. And they all want us to give them things to compensate for the fact that we're developed and they're not. And I don't really buy all that stuff.
Yeah, we owe you because you didn't you didn't advance at the same pace we did. So what does he think he tell me this. Do you think, based on you've been watching the interaction of the popes over a long period of time, do you think, how much sway do you think he has?
Well, I think he's actually hurt the influence of the Holy See in the world by taking these positions, because the Western world is the foundation of the Holy See's influence, the Western world. But he seems to want to jump to the undeveloped and Eastern world, and they don't really care about him. They don't share the Judeo-Christian ethic. They'll try to use him, but his strength is the countries that share the Judeo-Christian ethic and the respect, the opportunity the Holy See has to positively influence events in the world.
Do you think the because of his actions and his policies and the things he's saying are having an effect on the decline in the Catholic Church?
No, I think the decline of the Catholic Church has other reasons, like abuse scandals and young people not really caring about church and all that. But the fact that nobody is talking about what the Holy See has to say diplomatically, I think says a lot.
Yeah, that does. That's very telling. It was interesting, too,
you know. Off the field.
Well, here we had the Supreme Court decision, and where was he? You know, you would think he would have been excited about that.
You would think, but I don't think so. He's a whole lot more worried about how many starving people there are in Nigeria than anything else. And come on, how much oil has Nigeria pumped out and the country still poor as a church mouse?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, at some point there's some responsibility needs to be taken there.
And that was my problem with his encyclical about the environment. I'm very pro-environment, and I think a lot of things he aired in there were good. But he did not say one word about holding those corrupt African governments accountable for their actions. Not one word.
Why? Just because of his background?
Yeah, and the main drafter of it was a cardinal from Ghana.
Oh, yeah, that would have been that probably helped.
We call that the fox in the hen house.
Sure. Yeah, with a pen. How frustrating. Well, so do you, what do you hear? Do you still deal, I had a thing in your bio, I didn't know if it was still accurate, that you were the, let's see, American, you were still involved with the Council of American Ambassadors. Is that actually accurate?
Oh, yeah. Most all former ambassadors are involved with that.
Okay.
And I've written a couple articles for them over the years. They publish a quarterly newsletter that has, or a booklet that has articles, you know.
So what's the current ambassador say? Do you get to chat them up at all?
He's a really good guy. Yeah, Joe Donnelly is a really good guy. He will be a great ambassador. I think he's off to a good start. And he was the Democratic senator from Indiana, a very strong Catholic. I think he went to Notre Dame. And maybe he, being a liberal, being not a liberal, but being a Democrat, maybe he can help temper the Pope's excesses. I don't know.
Hmm. How much interaction, like when you were the ambassador, how much interaction do you really have with the Pope, or is it mostly with his guys?
Mostly with the Secretariat of State apparatus, but, you know, every 3 or 4 times a year I go see him about different things.
Hmm, that's kind of neat.
And he always speaks to all the ambassadors together on, like, the 2nd of January, so everybody gets to talk to him then, individually, one-on-one.
So there's basically no chance that that this Pope is going to wake up and smell the coffee and try to, you know,
try to moderate. After however many years, 50 or more years, as a liberation theologist in Argentina, I don't think so. Those leopards don't change their stripes.
No. Yeah. No, and I think his outlook on the American values and our way of life probably aren't on his top priority list.
Mm-mm, not at all.
Yeah, it's too bad. And I think that was, I think we saw that. I mean, as soon as he basically took over, I think people were concerned about his background and his political views. And needless to say, I don't think he disappointed.
He didn't surprise anybody.
Yeah. Yeah, it's too bad.
Interesting. Well, so so where do you spend all your time now?
Well, we're part-time in Washington and still involved some things there. And we have kids here, so my wife and I spend a lot of time here. And then we spend the winters in Naples, Florida, which is the area where I represented in Congress.
Okay. And do you get to, you know, do you get involved in any policy stuff still?
Yeah, I'm involved with the AEI and the Wilson Center Latin American Studies Group and the Inter-American Dialogue. So I get involved with those kinds of things.
We have
our own center that we set up in Notre Dame called the Bruni Center for the Study of American Democracy. We set that up about 14, 15 years ago, and we're doing a lot of things there. We have good scholars, and I think they're starting to make an impact. Mm-hmm. You could check it out, the Rooney Center at Notre Dame.
Yeah. Do you see the...
In fact, I would say our president or our director, Matt Hall, would be a great resource to have on your show.
Well, we'll have to, we'll make a note of that.
Write our phone number on the bathroom wall and see if he calls.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, you can Google him. It's all on the website. But he's a good guy, and he's put a lot of new life into the center, and we're working on a lot of initiatives to promote American democracy and look at some of the challenges that it has faced.
Yeah.
Hey, give me the web address again, please.
That I don't know. Google Rooney Center. It'll come up. Okay. I'm not that good on technology.
No worries.
I'm a little old for that.
There can't be that many of them. It's not a lot.
No, there's only one.
Yeah, no.
The Rooney Center at Notre Dame, I guarantee you there's only one.
Okay. That's easy. I will add that to our website so that it's right there.
In light of the current immigration issue we're having down at the border, is that impacting you folks there in your communities, or what's the response down there?
You know, immigration is such a frustrating issue. I worked very hard for George Bush in 2007 to get his reform package passed, which would not have granted amnesty like the labor unions and some of the other super conservatives said. That was a red herring. It was a way to legalize opportunities for people to come in here and work without an explicit grant of citizenship, and we would know where they are and who they are, and therefore minimize illegal crossings. It would have been a huge help. But it didn't get passed because of a combination of some extremely right-wing Republicans and the labor unions and the Democratic Party. And that was very unfortunate because we need the workers, but we need them legal, and we need to know where they are, and we need to know who they are.
Who they are,
we
exactly.
Need the process. Yeah.
Right, right.
Instead of this ridiculous no-border deal of people coming in and hiding out. I introduced a bill when I was in Congress that you could not ask for asylum if you're already in the U.S., the same thing that Trump's Remain in Mexico policy did. And
right.
I think that's the most logical thing. How can you claim asylum if you're not if you're here?
Yeah, right.
No right. Asylum to claim.
That you're supposed to, the asylum process is supposed, you're supposed to file from the country that you're in.
That used to be the case, but liberal federal judges have radically undermined that over the years.
Of course. But the idea wasn't, hey, let's run to the place you want to be and then say, hey, can I come in?
And that's what they do, though.
That wasn't actually the program.
It takes 5 or 6 years to have your case adjudicated, so they go off into the hinterlands and go to work and hide out, and there, no one knows where they are, who they are, how to find them, and they're just in the system. There they are.
Right. Right.
Yeah, and then we've got to do something about that. So then, well, we're going to have to bring all these people out of the shadows. Well, holy cow, the shadows are getting kind of crowded. We've brought in, 2 million people they're on track for at this point?
It's ridiculous. The whole thing makes zero sense at all.
And
a country with no borders under international law, I don't know how you call it a country.
Yeah, it's not
a country. Remember geometry? In geometry, you have to have lines that define what's in and what's out. Therefore, you define a rectangle or a rhombus or a triangle or whatever it is by where those lines are. We don't have any lines.
No, they're not even wavy lines. Well, and then I mean, I know people's heads exploded when, you know, the IRS was green-lighted to have more employees, not that they're organized enough to actually hire them and train them right now, but, you know, and people are thinking, well, Border Patrol could use extra people. Like, what about them?
Yeah.
No consideration
well,
for that.
Well, all across the government, there's dysfunctionality all across the government.
The
IRS is totally dysfunctional, too, and they don't seem to be able to get their work done. And I'm all for catching tax cheats. I mean, I pay my taxes, you know, and a lot of the people that cheat are, the liberals don't like this, but it's lower-income filers. It's self-employed people who really should be on a salary but don't act like it, and they don't pay their fringes.
Yeah, well, they've and now with the automatic deduction, most people are taking that, so people aren't itemizing. The number of people who have wiggle room or have gone down dramatically.
But, yeah,
I was curious when you were in Congress. It probably took 2 or 3 weeks probably to get an inquiry through for a constituent on an IRS issue. That's pretty.
Oh, if they'll even call you back.
Well, now. They won't pick up the inquiry. They won't take an inquiry from a member of Congress for a constituent for 7 months. They don't even pick it up for that long.
Wow. That's sad.
It's crazy.
Well, we do have this imperial bureaucracy. You made a point about that, and I think it's a good one. You know, they're totally unaccountable, and they have a lot of power, but it goes back to the stupid Congress, okay? They write these vague laws.
Yeah.
Because they don't want to take a hard stand, and it gives the bureaucracy a lot more wiggle room as to how to interpret them. That's what the whole Chevron doctrine is about, that the Supreme Court's trying to chip away at.
The
bureaucracy should not be able to interpret congressional laws.
Right. Because they shouldn't be able to make laws. But it's kind of interesting, because even when, you know, people will say, well, bills are too long. Okay. Well, our member of Congress here wrote an amendment that said that the Army Corps of Engineers could not regulate ongoing farming practices. That was the entire amendment. And it passed. It was in some bill, whatever, and passed.
Who was that, Valadeo or somebody?
No, it was LaMalfa.
Oh, yeah. I know him.
Yep. And so anyway, you know, you can't, Army Corps, you can't regulate ongoing farming practices. Well, they were jacking up one of our constituents who's actually running for Congress, Duarte. If he gets in there, good luck to them. that guy's got an axe to grind about 100 miles long. And so the congressman sits down with the Army Corps of Engineers, says, okay, well, this problem is now solved because this guy is farming on ground that's been farm ground forever. And they said, and he pushed the amendment across the table to him, and he said, that's a law. You can't do it. And they said, that's not the way we read that.
Nice.
I mean, yeah. Army Corps of Engineers can't regulate ongoing farming practices? How else do you read that? It was really, really easy. It wasn't written in some legal jargon or anything. That's exactly what it said. And
we've had our problems in Florida with the Corps kind of interpreting law to give them a lot more flexibility.
Oh, yeah. They just claimed that's not the way they read it, and they went right about their business. And
the Corps is nothing compared to the EPA.
Yeah, well.
The Corps is J.V. Ball, as a lot
J.V.
versus the EPA. They are the major league.
That's true.
In
they
terms
are.
Of leading and inventing law and doing their own agenda at the expense of everybody else.
Unbelievable. We'll be right back. We've got to take a quick break. We are speaking with Francis Rooney. He was an ambassador and a congressman and an all-around good guy. We're happy to have him on. You're listening to We the People, and you can find us at wethepeopleradio.us.
Still was a blind man, though my
Mr. Rooney, I'm going to swerve back to the Pope and his and his just the way he has handled this discussion. Do you think he does he meet with Putin? Do popes meet with Putin?
He's met with Putin, sure.
Has he?
Oh, yeah. The popes end up meeting with almost any world leader of any kind of country that counts for much of anything.
So he's not really helping everybody else with his comments, but he doesn't like Putin either, does he?
Well, no. I don't think he likes the violence and the oppression that Putin's wreaking upon the Ukrainians. He made that clear. But he also says, well, you know, but there's two sides to this. Well, I don't buy it. I don't think there's two sides to what Putin's done, going in there trying to exterminate a country.
Yeah. And so, I mean, just, and this is a silly question, and I'm not sure you could even answer it, but does Putin care what the Pope says?
Probably not.
Okay.
And it's made a little more complicated by the fact that Ukraine was the original heartland of Russia. There was a guy named Vladimir, like the 800s, that was a Ukrainian. He was the head of Russia. They called it the Kievan Rus. And really, if it hadn't been for the Muscovies up there that had to go down and repress, the capital of Russia might well be Kiev. Hmm. But that's 800 years. Okay, that's 800. That's 1,200 years ago. Now we're where we are right now, and they're a fledgling democracy, albeit extremely corrupt. And it's not right for Putin to go in and exterminate them.
Yeah. And I think that's a point that a lot of Americans have is, you know, if you do your homework, Ukraine has always been a very corrupt country. And I'm not saying it justifies what Putin's doing. I mean, if he's going to go to war with another military force, that's one thing. But he, like you said, he's in there exterminating the civilian population. But the Ukrainians weren't like this great democracy prior to all of this, and I think that's kind of the cover they're trying to put on this is we have to protect this democracy,
shining example of democracy.
Yeah, and it really wasn't. I mean, they were
well, and then Americans
corrupt.
Were like, well, how much is this actually? How much of this are we involved in really? And how much do we have to pay for? And it seems to have no end in sight.
It's a whole lot less than what we're going to pay for with this new infrastructure bill, that's for sure.
Oh, yeah.
They got less than the IRS, for heaven's sakes.
Yeah. Oh. And the thing is, look, if we don't finally step up to Putin, who knows where we'll stop?
That's always
the thing. We've laid by the log, and we've let Putin, Russia, and China go about their business and work against the interest of the Western world. And we've just been stupid about it. And with China, it goes back to 1998 or 9 when they got in the WTO. With Putin, it goes back to when he first took the properties in Georgia and started poisoning people around the world, and we didn't do anything. I mean, I've got a list on my computer. He's poisoned 60 people.
Wow, he's getting up close to the Hillary
outside of his country.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's not like Lenin. I mean, he hadn't, or Stalin. He hadn't killed 30 million, but he's working towards it, I guess. He's killed a lot of people in the Ukraine.
Yeah. Yeah, no, he's not a good guy. But I think as far as just dumping billions of dollars into Ukraine for arms that we don't even know where they're going, well, I think we do know where a lot of them are going, I think there has to be some way we can put some controls on that to make sure that they are actually going to protecting and fighting off Russia. Because I think a lot of it is being
sold,
diverted and sold on the black market. And we just keep shipping it over there. Well, that stuff,
yeah,
I think
I
that's going
to
it's going to come back and bite us. I mean, you can't.
I hope we have some kind of controls over where things are going. But as you're right, you rightly say, Ukraine was one of the most corrupt countries in the world before this stuff happened, and probably still is. We had big problems with the corruption at the border of the Ukraine. That's why it was so difficult to come to the decision to send the javelins over there back in whatever it was, 2018.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because, I mean, those types of weapon systems, they get in the wrong hands. And, I mean, you're going to shoot down airliners. You're going to, I mean, you can do some serious, serious damage with it. And we really don't know where a lot of this stuff is ending up. And that's really bad.
Yeah.
If we had a different pope that was more a diplomat, who do you think's the best diplomat we've had in like the last, you know, in our lifetime?
Pope?
Yeah.
I would say Benedict and John Paul.
Yeah. John Paul was a nice
guy. In our lifetime. And before that would have to be Pius XII, who had to navigate through World War II. But Benedict took on Iran. He took on the corrupt countries in Africa. He spoke up aggressively about human rights and religious freedom. And I thought he was a very effective diplomat. He took on the Muslims big time.
Yeah, that's true.
He took a lot of grief for that. Now, and John Paul, of course, took on the communists. So those two, Muslims and communists, they confronted some of our biggest threats using the Holy See's unique form of diplomacy.
Hmm.
Yeah.
I didn't know that about Benedict.
I guess I did, but he lost all his brownie points with me when he changed all the wording to all the prayers that I've said for 50 years. I got a church.
Was that Benedict or was that Francis? No, it was
Benedict. He was the legalist. He got in there and recalibrated the translations of everything, and now we have words like consubstantial, and people are like, what?
Oh, yeah, I remember that.
Yeah, I'm still muttering the wrong prayers. Bill elbows me all for an hour. That's the wrong one. That's the wrong one again.
She refuses to change.
Can't help it.
Yeah, I'm with you. I do too.
It's like, I'm just going to do my own. I'm hoping everybody will swing back later. We'll just have a little revolt. I'd forgotten. I'd forgotten he was a, he really did some hardline diplomacy. But with those guys.
Remember the Regensburg thing when he took it, we got into it with the Muslims.
Yeah, that's right. I forgot about that. So you think if we had a strong player there who would be an ally of solving problems rather than just kind of throwing gas on it, do you think that would make a difference?
Well, I do. I mean, I think there's a role for the Holy See to play in diplomacy. So if there is, what we have going on now is you denounce Putin for his horrific aggression and effort to exterminate the Ukraine to serve his own personal purposes. You don't give him any quarter or any way out or say there's two sides to it or any of that kind of stuff, which is kind of the way Benedict did the Muslims. And then you say to China, look, you guys have broken every rule in the world. You continue to break the rules. You're hegemonic. You're manipulating the world to your benefit. And in the long run, that's going to be a serious problem for the developed world. I mean, They're about to, there's a base in Sri Lanka, Hambantota, that is exactly where Xing He had his base in like 1425 or so. And the Chinese are there now. They built it, and Sri Lanka couldn't afford to pay for it, so they took it over. Guess what? It could become a military base.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's their MO, is they start off...
Like Gwadar in Pakistan.
Yep. And then the next thing you know, it's a Chinese base.
Surprise!
Yep.
Oh, could have seen that coming.
Yeah.
Yeah, and with Biden and the, you know, obvious kowtowing to China, that's puts us in a very bad place.
Well, and the Holy See's doing that, too. They see the possibility of a lot of Catholics over there. And I think they've become quite obsequious to the hegemonic ambitions of Xi.
Right.
They see Catholics over there?
Oh, yeah. There are a lot of Catholics over there.
I know, but don't they all get killed?
In the context. No, there's a lot of Catholics over there. And when I was over there, the Holy See used to think that someday there could be 300 or 400 million of them there because China was so big. So they get kind of seduced by the, like Standard Oil, light the lamps of China. Everybody gets seduced by the volume of people in China and the thought of the opportunity to serve them, whether it's in business or religion or whatever.
I guess they're,
it never works out.
I guess they neglected to read the information that comes out about the Falun Gong and the Uyghurs and all that, because having a strong belief presence in China mostly just gets your organs harvested.
About all the critical components that we let China dominate the markets while we were asleep at the switch.
Well, and if, as a, as an outside business, when you go to China, it's just a matter of time before China owns that business, and you're out. And
yeah, you'll do it their way, or you're out.
Yeah, and they've been that way the whole time, and I find it interesting that Americans still go over there, set up shop, and then cry foul when everything is stolen and taken away from them.
They steal it, they copy it, they sell it for less, and you can leave now. Yeah.
Right. Well, look at all the companies that roll over to them. Google, Marriott, Delta had a map that included Taiwan on their websites, and China protested. They took that thing down before sundown.
Really?
And who was this?
Marriott and Delta.
No kidding.
They had a map on their website of all their locations, and it included Taiwan.
Well, isn't it still a place? Are we pretending it's no longer on the map?
Well, not according to China.
No shit. Wow, that's a... I don't think I can say that. I'm sorry about that.
And Google rolled over to them. They gave them all their source codes and said Google China is different than Google everywhere else. Not that I'm a big fan of Google anyway.
Yeah, no. Yeah, right. But, I did not know that. Yeah, we want Taiwan off your map because it's no longer on the... It's no longer a place on the Earth.
Yeah, it's part of China.
That's
so
confusing.
Yeah.
So what are you supposed to call it? It's just a blob. It just sits there with no name.
And the thing today, I think it was in the Washington Post, I read an article. They're making a very aggressive moves in the Solomon Islands. They're going to set up a new military base over there. They've paid off the president, you know, of course. And
yeah.
Probably doesn't cost much to pay that guy off. And they're going to make a base there, the Solomon Islands. That's halfway between New Guinea and Fiji and Tonga and all those. So that's like a just southwest of Hawaii. They're creeping their way on.
What a terrific little stepping stone.
Yeah.
It'll be incredibly handy. I bet they'll have fuel there and snacks for the pilots. Good grief.
In Mentota, on the south end of Sri Lanka, is in a pretty strategic place, given all the traffic that goes through the Straits of Malacca and around the north side of Indonesia.
Jeez.
Yeah, and we're just we're rolling over for it. Yeah, it's not a good position to be in, and I don't know what it's going to take for us to kind of wake up
and not that we could really put a stop
to it right now, because our military is, you know, still working on their pronouns, but
we have a political military, not a fighting military.
Mm-hmm.
It's about people.
Yeah,
we have an $800 billion defense budget, four times China's, but we can't build any ships with it. We're using all the money for other things,
mm-hmm.
some of which you allude to right there.
Yeah, yeah, and I just wonder how seriously
we could probably close 3/4 of the bases in this country. Who needs all these bases all around, like in the middle of the country? We should have all of our bases within 200 miles of each coast.
Yeah,
that would make a lot of sense. And then China's buying the farmland next to them, so it'd make it easier for them to spy. They wouldn't have to buy so much of our ground. Wow, what a hater. I let out my little hater monster there for a second. Well, we have hit the timestamp here, so we've got to let you go and enjoy your time in wherever you are, Florida perhaps. Have fun, and we're very happy to chat with you again, and thanks for all your good work. Keep writing, and we need your voice out there. This is a unique...
Yeah, thank you very much for coming on.
Nobody knows about this.
Thanks for having me on. Have a good day.
Thanks a lot. Coming back, we're going to talk to Dr. Stuart Reese about marijuana. Big shock.